lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Good evening and welcome to Song Talk Radio. I think I started that cue too fast there.
Yeah.
Are we good? Well, good evening once again. We're technically perfect here at Ryerson. Good evening and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, episode number 184, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. And we have brand new songwriters. We have established people like tonight on our show. And together we just share tips, techniques. We never share a toothbrush. And all the things we find, and hopefully together, I think it's because I had that iced coffee, and it had a little bit of caffeine.
A little jittery there, Bruce?
You're a bit wired.
I'm a bit jittery, right?
You're a bit wired. Anything can happen, ladies and
Tim
gentlemen.
Tim Hortons. It's on all summer for 99 cents. The small. We all become a little bit better at writing songs, and you can find us live every Tuesday. Can you tell it's live? At 7 p.m. on CJRU 1280 AM Toronto, or on the live stream at songtalk.ca if you can't get to a radio. I'm your host, Bruce Harrett, and joining me tonight, as always, the intrepid members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. The other guy, and what's his name? No, it says that right here.
That's me.
Neil Modi.
That's me.
And we got Phil Emery over there. And bravely managing the social media onslaught, Vanessa Vreeland.
Hey, Vanessa.
And over on the board, we call it the board. It's actually a mixing board there. We have Rafael El-Haddad.
Hey, Rafael.
Let's have a round of applause for him.
Yay.
That's enough. He's on the board. During the show, join in the conversation and send your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter, and we'll share them with the audience in real time.
Not fake time.
Real time. And please stop by our website at songtalk.ca. Find out how you can be a guest on our show. Tonight, our guest is Jeff Leeson. He plays... Oh, wait. We got a woohoo from Vanessa. You have a fan already, Jeff.
I saw the camera shaking a lot. Getting really into that woohoo.
Well, you were on. We're on Facebook Live, you see.
Yeah.
You thought radio, you'd get away from this camera thing.
No.
This is all happening here.
No, I
video's
took,
the new thing, apparently.
It's
the new
thing.
I took the last four or five days getting together.
Okay.
For
all right. Let me talk about Jeff. Playing multiple instruments and writing songs since his mid-teens, Jeff eventually succumbed to a music career in his early 20s. He succumbed to it.
Ouch.
2.5 years in, he joined the backing band for the multiple award-winning CCMA. That's the country, what is that?
Canadian Country Music Association.
Of course it is. Duo of the Year, Tim Taylor and Anita Paris. By the mid-90s, Jeff became the founding member and lead singer-bassist for the popular Eastern Ontario trio Ambush. What part of Eastern Ontario would it be? Cornwall?
We started out in Ottawa.
Ottawa.
Eventually moved down, well, moved the business down to Kingston. But
Kingston.
We had played
Eastern
anywhere.
Eastern Ontario,
from,
yeah, cool.
From Windsor to Montreal, I guess.
That is capital city, Ottawa. Following the height of their popularity, they were so popular, he just left and turned to solo work. We'll be talking about that later.
Sure,
both on stage and in the studio, still doing the do things. He's currently preparing his next album, Topic of the Day. I like that. And performing throughout Southern Ontario. Please welcome Jeff Leeson.
Yay.
Here he is.
Welcome, Jeff.
Hey.
And,
thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for coming by. Now, you live out of town, right? Somewhere you're 613?
A little bit, yeah.
Where is that?
Just inside the 613 area code.
Oh.
That's east of 7 on, east of Peterborough on 7, exactly 1.6 kilometers north of 7.
Oh.
And if you're from that area, you know what 1 mile north of 7 means.
What country?
It means redneck.
Okay.
Is it snow belt?
Yeah, snow belt.
Yeah, it's a tropical
special
area.
Weather, yeah.
So tell me, stumbled on that because you said you're at your height of your popularity and you turned to solo work. Did you disband the band or do you still perform together? Or?
Yeah, the band is still going.
Oh, okay. With you?
No. I left at the, well.
You started a band, then you left it and it went off on its own?
Yeah.
Well, cool.
I moved on. The band had decided to continue on with certain.
Did they fire you?
No.
I left.
Was it creative differences or I professional left. Thing? Or
yeah,
rather not say, perhaps.
Basically, business and managerial decisions.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Music's full of those.
Bands are complicated things.
They
you
are.
Know, it's yeah. like you can.
Phil, you were in a band.
I've been in many bands. I've been in bands since I was 15.
Oh, jeez. I didn't know there was more
I'm
than one.
I'm in a band now. Oh, yeah. I haven't been for 20 years. So.
Yeah, no, they're very. You can have bands that are magic with chemistry and a nightmare with personalities.
Yeah.
Like
or
a
the
marriage.
Reverse.
Like the Police.
Or the reverse, yeah.
Or you can have people who get along well and the music is, you know.
Right. It's some people say that creative friction creates better music. I'm not so sure, but it
can.
Lennon McCartney, it can. I mean, yeah. I think if it's managed properly, so that you have that conflict, then you have manage it properly and you decide to get along. But certainly bands, it brings up so much creativity and passion in people, right?
Certainly with the Police. I mean, the Police.
They hated each other, but but they burned out fast, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I still think that's best. Like, everyone, Sting, Stuart Copeland.
Andy Summers,
you know, they're doing solo stuff, but they were still magic together, and their solo stuff is good, but it's never quite got that magic.
But Jeff turned to solo work. And so when you perform on stage and record your albums, then you're a solo act. It's your guitar.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So when you went into the studio, what did you do when you left the band? Did you go off, I've got all these songs that you hadn't shared with the band that you're working on yourself?
Or? Well, I was somewhat fortunate enough to have enough regional attention, say, east of Toronto. I formed my own little label. A boutique label.
Oh.
Does that make it sound special?
Yeah.
Yes. People actually talk about a label. People say that about, well, now what exactly is,
what is a
label? People use that phrase all the time. So what is it?
Yeah, these days I don't know how most people would describe it.
What was your label for your term? What did it comprise of?
Back in that day.
5 years ago.
It was a matter of finding acts that you'd be interested in working with, maybe their music. Sometimes it was a surprise. But essentially, helping them plan and record and produce and then manufacture and then help promote recordings.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't just a label for yourself. You wanted to help other musicians.
Yeah, I've probably produced 3 or 4 dozen albums.
Really?
Nice.
Wow. So
just regional releases for local.
So you know what you're doing.
And how has that description of the label changed today or more recently?
Well, that's a great question. I think what some people call a label now is just, I have some gear in my basement.
Right.
Cool. I'm a label. I just found out I'm a label.
Yeah. But they still have
some friends over, yeah.
The major labels are still working, right? Warner Music Canada and all these big ones, but they've consolidated. There's basically three now, apparently.
Yeah,
Sony and someone else. But so I want to talk more about the songwriting since this is a songwriting show. So you're working. Were you writing songs in your mid-teens for just to play for your friends, or were you in a band at that point?
Oh, in a little bit of preparation for the show, I found myself trying to go over a bit of my own personal timeline. I don't have a specific time, but somewhere in my mid-teens, I started writing.
And you wrote
it was it ended up being mostly for cathartic purposes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They could barely be called songs in the sense of, the literal sense of, these are lyrics to this melody, but I would never let anybody hear them.
What was your instrument?
I had picked up the guitar when I was 12, so I'd been playing a few years by the time I was writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then shortly after I started writing, a friend loaned me a bass guitar, and then I started playing drums in high school, and that kept me out of jail.
Okay, kept you busy. Yeah. So we were in a band in high school? Did you have a high school band?
No.
Just jamming?
How long was it before you started sharing your songs with anybody?
With anybody?
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that either.
Like, was it years later? Or was it
Yeah, it was
like,
pretty well.
Like
other than some friends.
He's not 80 years old, by the way. So. No, it's like you're remembering a former century.
It just feels like that.
You know, it was a former century, actually.
Back in the day.
The last millennium. That puts a date on it. It wasn't until, actually, I think my first full-time band, one of the things that drew me into, a band who's touring and doing this full-time, and they already had released 2 or 3 singles.
Mm.
And part of that draw for me was, original music. Oh, cool. So within a few months, we were in this studio, but that never got released.
Okay.
The studio is.
At that point, you started bringing your original songs to the band.
Yeah, I was kind of confident enough to have more than just friends and family here. Yeah,
what was it like back then to actually release stuff?
Like now, a band can go in and into the studio and record some stuff, and then they put it out onto CD Baby and SoundCloud, and you can release it. But back then, to release it, you had to get cassettes made or CD made. There was like money involved.
My album in 1996, I spent a couple thousand on. On the manufacturing of the CD and the printing of the CD booklet and then the cassettes and the cassette insert, it gets very expensive. Now it's all electronic. I'm curious about what was your experience of bringing a song to a band?
For the first time?
Well, just that first period when they're going to tamper with it, right? Right? Ego. Was it a challenge?
Well,
they're going to try to improve it probably, right?
Yeah, I guess there was some trepidation, but what year would that have been? Oh, yeah, I'm not going to bother telling you the year. But by that time, I'd been writing and recording demos for 8 or 9 years. So I'd had enough of an odd look or two from particularly family that I built up, a bit of a defense. Well, then they're going to hear songs the way they want.
Yeah.
And then later, I'm not talking about your bandmates criticizing you.
I'm talking about the collaborative nature of a band. Was it collaborative, or did you say you'll play it my way?
These early recordings, before I joined any full-time bands, they were very collaborative with some friends. So
You were used to that.
Yeah, quite a bit.
But when you first started bringing songs to the band, in your mind, was it, I've got this great song and the band's going to play it the way I wrote it? Or did you go into it thinking, this is kind of incomplete anyway, let's see what
you guys can I had kind of learned from lots of, like about 6 hours of recorded originals before that band, what it would be like to work with the, dare I say, the ego of other musicians.
Right.
So I always had the option to either write and record something exactly or as best I could as I was hearing it and then say, okay, that's my baby. I'm not going to let anybody else hear it. I got it out of my system kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But these other songs that are more commercial, et cetera, I think I'm well prepared for a band now to take it on, maybe rearrange it, maybe prepare it for like that first recording.
So the more personal ones you keep to yourself.
Well, not necessarily just personal, but more personally favorite. I wouldn't say as personal as, oh, there's too many Jeff secrets in this song for anybody to hear. Okay. Just for one reason or another, a particular song really grabbed me about, wow, I really like that. And I don't ever want to hear a different arrangement. Mm. I don't want to hear anything changed in it. Maybe not even, like, don't even raise it a semitone. I mean, working with others, that's always a crucial thing when it comes to any part of the creative process. Well, I think I kind of learned that early on.
It's an opportunity and a challenge, right? Because there's a great opportunity, as Phil has talked about. He used to bring songs to his bands. And, you know, sometimes, like when I brought song to a drummer once, he started on a completely different tempo. Like I said, it goes like this. And he said, no, let's try. It was better. It was better, right?
Yeah. Sometimes it takes a while to figure out it's better, too. Because you get really married to what
it
sounds
wrong.
Like.
Yeah.
And then it takes a while, and you go, oh, yeah, actually, it is better. You know?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing for a writer / performer to go through for the first few times.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like the tempo to be this, and I'm hearing straight time, but then the drummer starts putting in many different things. Maybe even puts it into a swing or something, and it just makes your mind go, oh, wow.
Wow, that was cool.
Speaking
and then
of
they
songs.
Want to go back to the original one. They don't want to do the new thing. That used to drive me nuts. That was fantastic. Don't forget that. And they go, what do I do?
Jeff, I would like to hear
hear a song.
Just me, I'd like to hear a song. Oh, yeah. And I think our listeners would, too. You're going to play something live for us, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So we'll just set you up on the mic and everything and all that stuff. This one's called Steven at the Beer Store. When I heard this, I'm going to save my comments for after we hear the song, but I immediately liked it. So there's that. Did you want to say anything about it before we play, or do you want to just do it and comment after?
Yeah, Q&A after.
Okay, that's what we're all about.
Wow, this usually doesn't stay in tune that well.
Oh, we're lucky. Steven at the Beer Store, written and performed by Jeff. Oh, wait a minute.
What?
There's a call right here.
There's a quiz later.
James Ingram? The James Ingram?
James A. Ingram.
Oh, okay. Damn. I thought it was that guy from Los Angeles.
He's from Trenton.
Okay. So this is a co-write, and it's very important here on Song Talk Radio. We do who are the writers. This was co-written by James A. Ingram and Jeff Leeson in 2016, Chancellor Music. It's called Stephen at the Beer Store.
That is a little flat.
Do you feel it's necessary to park in that space? Can you justify with dignity and look me in the face? The sign says pregnant moms, the elderly, so find another place and welcome to the beer store. Hello, my name is Stephen. The name tag's pretty clear. I've been held up in cash bad checks and even reduced to tears. I'm 36 come April. My mom says another year of living in her basement. Yes, it's hard when you're just a lad growing up with several different dads. Mom said, hey, life's tough, but that's just too damn bad. I'm not driving you to work today. My high school education has served me very well. I may just be addicted to the sweet and sticky smells. Cold out back, hot up front, adult clientele, working for the juice man. There's a sense of law and order, pushing plastic and glass. I'm not a people person, but time seems to pass. It's an interesting perspective of culture and class from the counter at the beer store.
Stephen at the Beer Store, written by James A. Ingram and Jeff Leeson, and performed live here on Song Talk Radio, 1280 AM, by Jeff Leeson. That was such a cool song. It's I wrote down Slice of Life. Of Canadian life, right?
That's true.
And it's such a Canadian song, but what I really love is the snapshot of Stephen at 36, the details of, like, judging the person parking, that would be me, judging the person parking in the elderly spot, and then living in the basement, and the sadness about that, and then a little bit of background on the bridge, so we see where he's come from, right? It's a really good narrative about a person, so we can get to know this dude, right? And I really, before I pass it on to the other guys, I wanted to talk about your rhyme scheme, because I think it's so cool, because you do space, face, place, beer store, clear tears, year, basement.
Yeah.
No rhyme on the fourth line. So it's AAAB. And I love that because it's like you don't throw away the last line, but it's the beer store, the basement. And it really grounds the song, and it's a surprise.
Yeah.
So you got us hooked in with the rhymes happening, and then you just bang, like that. The only thing I would add to this, if I was to co-write with the two of you guys to bring about a change in it, would be I would like a little more.
Thinking that. To me, it was like it's so short.
A little more song. I don't know what part of Stephen's
bridge. Like musically, the bridge was really good.
Yeah,
and like you just did it once, and I was just going, and I was kind of, I must admit, I expected you to do another one because I was hoping you were going to do another one because I liked it so much.
Because it had a chorus feel to it. It had a refrain.
And it was interesting because lyrically it was such, you know, the bridge was a very different kind of viewpoint, which is, of course, what a bridge is supposed to be. But musically it was so nice, and it was such a nice break. Another thing that's interesting in the song is this is a song without a chorus.
Yeah, it's verse, first bridge.
And but it's not the same refrain.
No, but I think bridge is serving as a chorus in a way, because it's the break from the verses. When you don't have a chorus and you've called it a bridge, and that's cool. I mean, it's your song, right? But I really think when you break from two verses into a new pattern, that the expectation in the listener is we're in a kind of a chorus thing. They don't know what a bridge or chorus is probably, but they can feel the difference. And to me, a bridge is between a chorus and a verse, right? So anyway, over to you, Neil.
Yeah.
You like the song?
What's that?
You like the song?
I like the song very much. I mean, like you said, kind of the slice of life thing. About the quote-unquote bridge, I mean, we're at the point where we're just talking about nomenclature, right?
But
hold on a second. Because typically when we say chorus, the chorus is repeated. This section is not repeated. So I would say it's not a chorus for that reason.
Right.
For the other reason that the title shows up twice. Well, the beer store part of the title shows up twice at the end of two of the verses, which leads me to believe that it's more, I would describe it more as a verse refrain plus a bridge. Right?
Where's the refrain?
The refrain is the last line of each verse.
Yeah,
it's not the same refrain, which typically when they say refrain, they can be different.
Right.
So sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different.
It's a recurring motif.
But it's a recurring motif. And like you say, because of the space, face, place, store. Clear tier years basement. Like the last line of the verse does get highlighted as a change, as a different thing.
Jeff is looking like, is this my song they're talking about?
Yeah,
I never saw this in here. Right? What are you talking about?
It's like, and I loved it because you really like the way you set up it. This kind of a song can be tough to do because it's how do you set up the song. I mean, some people might go, "Hello, my name is Stephen," from the very first verse. But by doing that as a second verse, it kind of helps you sort of build the space because you don't really know what the person is saying. Is like, do you feel it's necessary to park in that space? Which is a very odd way of starting a song, but that makes it so interesting. But putting the "Hello, my name is Stephen" in the second verse really kind of it really gets you sort of invested in the person, and especially when you find out about his bridge. And that's why I was so frustrated that it was so short, because I wanted to find out more about Stephen. Like, there's like another bridge there, you know? would you think about doing this more? It's a great song. Like, it's so short.
Oh, well.
Well, we talk a lot in the show about interrupting expectation and fulfilling expectation.
Well,
it's a balance between the two, right?
Yeah.
So you've got three people who wanted more. We're not necessarily representing everyone. However, when you frustrate the listener in a song, it doesn't make for such a popular song. However, when you fulfill too much and you go, "Oh, I was expecting that," then it's ordinary. This is quite extraordinary. I would call it Stephen. I wouldn't call it Stephen. I just call it Stephen so it's easy to remember. Have you heard that new song, Stephen, by Jeff
Leeson? The interesting thing about Stephen at the beer store is the title is in third person. The song is in first person.
I know.
Yeah. Which is kind of – which, again, that's the interruption of the expectation.
I mean, my name is Stephen. My name is Stephen might be a great title too.
Or my me name. At the beer store. Anyway. It doesn't matter. But
I love it.
One thing I wanted to point out is that the bridge was fascinating because the chord pattern changed there. The point of view actually changed. And in the lyrical, it got a little more personal, a little more intimate, a little more introspective, right? Mm. And you actually got into that in the last verse.
Yeah.
And I thought – When I first saw the lyrics, I thought, well, maybe he just forgot to label that as the second bridge, because it seemed like perspective wise you were going to that separate place.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you would repeat the bridge music,
right?
A little more philosophical, because
it's a little more philosophical there.
Mm. Yeah,
And then maybe add another verse or something. But yeah, it does kind of have that oddness to it.
You know, what struck me, Jeff, is that, you know, nobody said it yet, but this is a very educated employee. I mean, nobody talks like this who's just barely finished high school. Hey, here's some beer for you. No, there's lots of people working at the beer store with a college education, right? Because that's what they can find, and they're living in the basement.
It's got a little bit of the stereotypical bartender thing, right, where they know a lot about the people that come through their establishment, right?
Yeah.
And they're very observational that way.
He's philosophical. He's intelligent.
Yeah.
He's articulate. So the character himself is an interesting character, right?
I find it interesting that this is a co-write. Because this doesn't seem like a co-write kind of song. This seems like it's so focused as an artistic idea.
Mm. And one person's
co-writes tend to not do that. They tend to be...
How did that work? Tell us a bit about the story of the co-write.
James has been a long, long time friend of mine. He's not much writing or performing these days, but he's one of the most intelligent writers I've ever met. Mm. And he and I got chatting about our families one day, as I said, because we've known each other a long, long time. And this is about 7 or 8 years ago. For some reason, I had mentioned my mom worked at the LCBO. Mm. And if I recall it correctly, he said he had an idea for a chord structure and things and had basically written the first verse and a good chunk of the second. And he didn't know where to take it from there. Mm. So
he brought it to you.
So, yeah, he let me hack away at it. And we co-wrote almost everything else word for word. And maybe some of the bridge music is more mine than his. But
Is the bridge lyric more yours as well?
Pardon me?
Is the bridge lyric more yours as well?
There
is a bit of a twist.
No, that's about half and half.
Yeah?
It's hard to tell after a bit. I think Phil is looking at me as if he has a tweet.
From Sharon, Stephen at the Beer Store is a perfect title, in her opinion.
There you go.
She would like more, too. He says four.
Sharon, she said?
Yeah, she wants more.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you. Thank you, Sharon. I'll record a special version of Sharon at the Beer Store.
Sharon at the Beer Store.
What?
Or says, I would like more too, but something happier, please, or I'll cry.
Oh. Something happier is coming up. Don't worry.
Okay.
Is it a sad song?
No.
Is this a sad song?
I don't get it.
I didn't get that.
I mean, if you're 36 and living in your mom's basement, it's a little bit sad.
About the only major thing, I think the idea, the concept needed was something anchored in not just one of our experiences, but once it was clear that he had had James was very versed in beer stories and whatever, being Canadian, and so am I. And once we yacked about my mother's experiences and me remembering, oh yeah, I used to visit mom there. Mm. Wait a minute. This song deserves to be one of those people that as soon as they meet you, they just tell you their life story. Mm-hmm. Bloop.
Wow.
So as soon as we realized that was the premise of it, everything else was basically circumstantial. He happens to be at the beer store. He's just one of those guys that totally opens up to you. Mm-hmm. So once we realized we had clicked that way, we just ran with it, and that's what we got.
All right. Let's hear from Phil with a station identification.
Oh, yes. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streamed on songtalk.ca. Tonight, our guest is Jeff Leeson. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, and we'll share your thoughts in real time, just like we just did.
Mm, we did.
And you can always find all the links to the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have on August 15th, alternative folk rock songstress Cynthia Baba. On August 22nd is Bridget Fry. How would you describe her stuff?
Kind of folky indie, but she's also like 13 years old.
Ooh, that's going to be an interesting show.
What? She's 13?
Yeah. Something like that, 13, 14 maybe. She's very, very young.
That's great stuff.
Is she allowed to stay up after 7?
I guess
at that age you are, yeah.
August 29th, it's multi-platform. It hits songwriter from Los Angeles, Shelley Pikin.
My multi-platinum.
Multi-platinum, yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, she did Bitch and a whole bunch of other
She did a song called Bitch, which was a number one song. And I was at a songwriter's workshop here in Toronto called Song Studio. She was one of the teachers.
Yes.
And amazing. Great lady. Yeah, great show. Have a listen to that if you want to know about how to write the pop song.
Definitely. We know it's a good show because we actually recorded it already.
So. Yeah.
And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup on Wednesday, August 16th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Transact Club. It is free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. And back to you.
Okay.
I've got one other question, comment about Beer Store. So Beer Store is distinctly Canadian. The American equivalent is they even have
bottle shop. They don't have beer shops.
In fact, I would dare to say it's an Ontario thing.
Oh, I guess it would be.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because we've talked about this before about specificity in terms of place.
Yep.
So this is definitely an Ontario song.
It accidentally turned into that.
Is that a good thing to make a pop song?
Well, absolutely.
Ontario records?
Well, why not? And well, the other thing, too, is that anyone not from Ontario is going to understand what you're talking about, right? So it's not that stretched.
Yeah, it's a beer store.
It's generic enough.
Yeah, it's not Bob Cajun.
Yeah, it's not like saying the LCBO, you know? But, I mean, lots of other bands, you know, like the Beatles mentioned sort of very specific places in Liverpool or, you know, the Clash do that a lot. So I think you can do it.
I'm trying to work up a song with the name Calabogie in it.
Calabogie?
It's very difficult.
I got a gal in Calabogie.
Where's Calabogie?
Up towards Ottawa.
Oh, okay. Wow. Right. Perth
Calabogie.
County?
It's probably easier to
I think so.
With.
Yeah. If not, yeah, maybe Atlanta.
Once bought a great stogie in Calabogie.
Yeah,
there you've got your first one.
Oh.
That's a co-write. He wants 5%.
If anybody tweets in, do they get co-write credit?
Yes. Why not?
Everybody possible, does here at Song Talk Radio.
Everybody.
Raphael gets 1% of anything we talk about here.
That's right.
If you're in the room, you get a co-write credit. Right?
So now what percentage of stuff is co-writes for you?
What percentage of all the songs I've written?
Yeah. Like, do you co-write a lot or do you mostly work on when you're
Yeah, most of them alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, very open, very open definition. Words to the melody, whether I call them a song or not. maybe only about a quarter of everything I've ever performed or recorded myself have been co-writes.
What's your process, Jeff? Lyrics first, music first, guitar riff first?
Okay, then another question I really hadn't thought of.
I
like that. You guys keep me on my toes.
Good.
Well,
and the water is good, Vanessa,
our listeners want to know.
A good chunk the last few years, I really prefer a tagline, a title, and then a really clear premise for myself.
Huh. Start off with a title.
And so I guess generally speaking, it's lyrics first, some type of premise. If I'm not interested in the words, then...
There's no song.
Oh. Yeah. So you'd write just a rough verse chorus or something and then
Yeah,
go from
basically,
there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If the premise strikes me as original. Mm-hmm. I get bored really easy.
And then you add the melody to the lyric, because some people find that hard to make it scan.
Yeah, well... for way too many years, it was, I think I'm sad and I'm strumming and maybe somebody will love me more. And I would write and, you know, write the music and the lyrics at the same time.
Right.
Was that, sorry, Sharon, that was sad.
Yeah. I think I wrote that song too. So.
Yeah. We all have.
But a few years ago, some tunes I'm preparing for this Topic of the Day album, I decided to do the opposite. And for some reason, particularly strong and original melodies came to mind. Mm-hmm. So I sat there and plucked away and recorded them on something, maybe my phone or something, and then I structured the melody first. And we were talking before the show, Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Brill Building guys, they had the melody first, and then they wrote the words to fit the melody, syllable to syllable. And I'd never taken a conscious effort to do that until just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So sometimes now it's definitely lyrics first, it's definitely music first. And once the ideas start flowing for the premise, I kind of let it guide me as to how mm-hmm. to finish the song. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll work up a lot more lyrics before any other music. Maybe I'll do them together. Well,
whenever we ask this question on the show, we always say music or lyrics first, but there's also hook first, which sounds like what you're doing.
You've got
the premise, you've got a melodic interest, and in country that's also called the tag.
But yeah, the hook
the
line.
The tag
yeah.
or the hook,
yeah, yeah.
whatever, and you got that, and then that's really the center of your song.
Yep.
And then you can branch out from
Particularly
there.
Particularly if I'm okay with the concept of, or sorry, the impression of that initial premise, if I think that might be one that is, commercial.
Yeah.
You know.
If it's hook-worthy.
I'm okay with writing songs for me and because they just keep coming. I can't seem to stop them. But if I think, if one impresses me, maybe other people like this too, then, mm-hmm. yeah, I'll definitely try to keep it as approachable and consumable as possible.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Have you got a song that sold quite a few, or
no?
Okay. Well, no, but you sell. You probably sold when you performed, right? Did you take merch when you were doing live performances?
Yeah,
selling albums.
I had released two EPs up until last year, and then last year I recorded a live album of all original stuff, an unplugged kind of just me and two other buddies. And I'm selling that one off stage. Yeah, that's my taller in real life album.
Okay, so is that where most of your sales come from, the stage, when you're performing live?
Oh, yeah, as far as hard copies are concerned, absolutely.
No, any sale whatsoever. Are you making sales online as
yeah.
well? Okay,
yeah.
good.
Yeah, some airplay, some sales. And,
nice.
Yeah.
Just wanted to ask you about, Jeff, about this idea about the premise of a song. Do you find, like, as you do it more, as you practice it more, essentially, do you discern better what roads you're going to go down, or what ideas, or be like, hey, that would make a good song, as opposed to stuff that, you know, occurs in day-to-day life or whatever that may not make a good song?
I've gotten more confident at my guessing.
Right.
So, not until I'm really deep into a song, like by the second chorus kind of thing.
Do you know that it actually...
That I really feel it's going to cut it right. for me, let alone is anybody else going to enjoy hearing it.
Right.
But yeah, I can guess pretty early on for me now, at least, am I excited or interested enough in the premise and the whole style of the song. I can guess pretty early, is this going to, for the most part, draw me into finishing it? Now, that doesn't always work. I'm sure I'm not the only one.
No.
That doesn't always work. Some of them just you know, you run into that brick wall and then forget it, and then you never finish them again.
Yeah.
I still think they're good ideas, but I just haven't, I guess, gotten around to presenting them to anybody else. Gary, can you finish this?
Yeah.
Let's hear another tune. We have a recording, which Raphael will get ready for us now. It's called Make Time.
So,
and this was written by Jeff Leeson alone.
This is off your new album?
It's a new recording of a demo I had put out
a
long time ago.
Okay.
Oh, don't apologize about being middle-aged.
It's the worldwide radio debut of the first song off my new album.
Oh, excellent. Very exciting. Heard it here first.
All right, here it is.
Song Talk Radio exclusive.
Is it? Okay. Well, this is called Make Time, written and recorded by Jeff Leeson. That was Make Time, Jeff Leeson.
Woo!
Very cool song.
Very cool.
You're listening to CJRU, 1280 AM, coming at you from Ryerson here in Toronto, Canada. And we're talking to Jeff Leeson this evening about his writing, his songwriting. And That was a really cool song. I mentioned the Turtles, and I got a couple weird reactions here.
To me, it sounded more squeezy.
Squeezy. Well, I'm going way back, right?
Yeah.
Happy songs from the 60s. They were like the Association and the Turtles and... I don't know. I can't even think of the song. But it doesn't matter because it was so much fun with all the echoes in there, the background vocals. And
yeah, the callbacks, as they say.
Yeah, the callbacks.
Or answerbacks, sorry.
I think you just decided to make a really fun tune, right? Like, it was so much fun.
I liked them.
It's too short, though.
There was a great songs, there was a great variation. I love what you did on the second verse. There was a variation chord-wise. Mm-hmm. You didn't just do like the first verse over again. The end of your second line, there was a chord changes, which was really cool.
What chord
can
was
we,
that?
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I didn't pick up on
what
that.
Chords there were.
Probably what made the difference in the second was Hammond B3 type.
I think it's a
type
think
keyboard.
It seemed to be like more kind of a chord change, like real. Like,
so when you play really when you play the solo on a guitar, do you make a chord
not
change?
Not the solo. I'm talking about the second verse.
Yeah, no,
it's around where you has where
all the all the verses, including the lead over the verse per se. Yeah, they were all intended to be the same chord, but I think maybe from the second verse on, I might have added in another note or two, like a six or a nine or something on the keyboards.
Well, that'll do it.
But the guitars were playing the same thing throughout all the verses.
I'm very quizzical.
You'll have to listen again.
Yeah, because I listened at home. I should have noticed that.
So Sharon, are you happier now?
Homework.
And I like the...
that was for you, Sharon.
And your third, which is kind of this bridge, which is really neat. It's this kind of these run-on sentences, these run-on lines, the kind of... It's really interesting. And you actually do have a chorus, which is the Honey, I Would Make Time and Darling, I Would Make Time, which is nice. Instead of just going, Honey, I Would Make Time. But on the last one, I love that little sort of variation, which I've often talked about before. Honey, I Would Make Time, Darling, I Would Make Time, Sugar, I Would Make Time, You Know, I Would Make Time. I love that little sort of detail.
Do you? Not too much sweetness and sugar and honey. And
No, it's good.
Do girls still like that, by the way?
What?
Yeah. I think so.
Are you asking Vanessa? Vanessa's the only woman here. Do you like sweet songs?
Depends
on the guy, right?
Yeah,
that's the kind of reaction I've been getting from women all my life.
Phil, you're calling the end that very end part. And by the way, the lyrics are on the website.
That is true.
Okay, so we can look at that as well. So you're talking about the last four lines, Honey, Darling, Sugar, You Know I Would Make Time.
Yeah.
That's the chorus?
That's a chorus, yeah. Because that's the sing-song part.
Well, it's a refrain tagged to the verse, right?
It's another chorusless song.
Yeah, it's a refrain tagged on the chorus, but lots of people do that, right? Yeah. They end the verse with the title,
with
a little sing-along thing, but it's so catchy. It's the hook.
Yes.
Yeah, no,
Make time. If you don't get that one by the time you're finished with the song, right?
Well, of course, yeah.
That's what you remember.
Yeah, that's totally the earworm.
Hey, and that's the title, Make Time, so that's a good thing.
There you have it.
Phil has a theory that now more than ever, now that every song is a single on the internet, your title has to be memorable and has to connect to the song because you're going, oh, you got to hear this new Jeff Leeson song. What's it called? Make Time. Yeah, Make Time. Because there's no albums anymore unless you buy vinyl, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's a good point for all you songwriters out there. Keep it a memorable, simple title so that people can find
it.
For commerciality, absolutely.
If you hear it on the radio or somebody's playing it on their playlist, say at your house party, what's that called? Oh, you Make Time. Good old Google will probably find it, right?
Yeah, our friend of the show, Mike McInnes, thinks I'm wrong, but he's wrong. So, my show, Mike. Too bad.
Well, of course, there is point that if you do have many songs, as many songwriters do, if you have most of them or some of them that have very clear, discernible titles, then once you hit the Spotify page or the page on iTunes, you will find the other songs that don't necessarily have
the
B sides.
That's true. And then you can, if you actually do make a song with a really unusual title, that could make someone actually go, well, that's kind of weird.
What's that about?
Remember Palisades Park?
Yeah.
When that came out? What's Palisades Park? Oh, I'm talking from the last century now.
Like MacArthur Park, did they actually use the word MacArthur Park in the song?
Yeah, it was called MacArthur Park.
Well, I know it's called MacArthur, but was there MacArthur Park?
MacArthur Park is
in the
something
in the song?
Something, yeah. In the something, yeah.
Melting in the dark, yeah, all the sweet.
Melting in the dark.
It does actually say the word MacArthur.
Oh, yeah. It's so, a place in San Francisco.
I want to talk about this middle section.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if it was a verse or a bridge, like an extended verse or a bridge.
It was like a breakdown almost.
Yeah.
You just kept repeating.
I finally found what I was meant to do.
Yeah, line them up with all the overlapping voices. Like, when you perform this live with just you and a guitar, how do you do that?
I don't perform this one live.
You don't perform this one live.
No, well, not yet. I only finished mixing that last week.
Right, okay.
So it's got the fresh song smell to them.
I noticed that.
I thought that was my new shoes.
So that, what did you think of that technique, Neil? It's kind of like a bridging technique back to the chorus, right?
Because yeah, it's kind of a...
like a breakdown.
It's sort of like a breakdown, but it was kind of more full than a breakdown. You know what I mean? Like it was very wall-to-wall kind of sonically full.
A wordy
yeah,
breakdown.
Yeah. It was cool, though.
Yeah, really no, cool. It's, I mean, it's certainly...
Do you think it's too short, though? I do. Like I wanted something just one little bit more.
The length of that was intended to be very short, with it being such a
pop,
quickie pop tune.
Well, it's got such a great groove.
How long is it, Raphael?
2 minutes and something. Two minutes and four seconds or something.
2 and 7.
It's like a Ramon
song. Pretty sure. Uh-huh. Exactly.
218. So but pop songs are usually 3, aren't they?
Yeah. Something like that. But yeah. But the other thing with this, if you were to perform this live with a band, for example, the groove is so cool that you could riff on that groove, have some guitar, saxophone solos.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
You could lengthen this out very easily.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's... it's a really considered song. There's not a lot of sort of... sloppiness. There's not a lot of sort of, oh, I'm just going to repeat this. It's, you know, every line is considered.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even your breakdown, I mean, it's a really sort of, that's not just a standard breakdown where you just kind of, you know, have some drums going and then you
and
say,
it's very rhymey, right? It's that hat, do you, played hesitate, to you, right? So you're strong on your rhyme in this throughout this song, right? And which makes it more, I think, more fun and more accessible for people if they hear the rhyme.
That's a must, especially when you're talking about any form of popular music, you know, country or rock or whatever. It's an absolute must.
I think I would have gone, if again, as we say on the show, if I would do a rewrite of this with you, I would do a real breakdown and go to a strong instrumental for a full a full verse with some really fun, because you're bringing really fun, you said the Hammond B 3, and then, but you're also bringing some wonky guitar things.
Oh, yeah,
that
so-called lead break, yeah.
Yeah, but no, but I think it could handle, it's almost like a thing you want to dance to or bop to, that I think it could really handle an actual instrumental break that would make the song stronger.
Oh, yeah, if I wasn't stuck to having to do all of it myself.
Well, there's also that, too. At some point, you have to sort of just say, okay, this is done. And get it done, because otherwise you can just keep on working on stuff.
You talked about premise. You talked about premise, Jeff. So what was the premise when you, one day you were walking along the street and you thought a premise of this song? Or
this one?
Premonition? Afraid you were going to lose the girl? You thought I'd better make time? Or
this was one of two or three tunes that was sort of in reaction to a semi-joke somebody special in my life had said to me. And she said, oh, you've never written a song about me.
Oh, Neil did that.
I did that.
Yeah.
He did that for his wife, and she didn't like it. No, she liked it.
I know
it wasn't
for the...
what she wanted, but she liked it.
Isn't that marriage? It's not what you like. It's not what you wanted, but you like it.
It's okay.
I don't know.
As long as it still passes muster.
Yeah. So you thought, I'll write something for that special person.
Yeah, and there were... there were two others, and one was a really nice ballad. At least I liked it as a ballad. And then this one, very shortly after, like the next day came to me, and if I'm ever going to be able to, if I ever make an attempt to make something really poppy and classic rock sounding, it should be really short and sweet and be very simple and structured like that. And it was one of those. One of those days where I realized one of the phrases I'd been repeating over and over again was, yeah, I'll make time for that.
Did it work?
She likes it.
Yeah.
But she likes the ballad more.
Oh, okay. The ballad's more feeling.
I don't know. Women like
she
that.
She probably feels that it's too short. This song.
That is opening up a totally different kind of show.
That's what she said.
Anyways, but
I want to talk to you about that, this breakdown. What was the thought behind that?
Repeat the line there.
Yeah. As far as the repeating of the lyrics and what have you?
Were you running out of ideas?
I have no idea.
You were running out of ideas.
I have no idea. First time I sat down and played it and I got as far as the second chorus, I'm hearing overlapping callback type of vocals and even a bit of phasing and a bit 60s psychedelia in there. Mm. I can't make it sound like what I'm really hearing in my head, but I realized that those lines in particular really lent themselves well to overlapping and rolling like that.
It's really neat. It's a really interesting feature of the song. Actually, it needed one.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think that's kind of the crux of the thing. This gets back to what we were saying earlier about the length of the song. Mm-hmm. It's very short, right? Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason that it's very short is you had the premise, and you had the phrase. I would make time. And you kind of kept it at that. Like it's a very focused idea.
Yeah,
straightforward,
simple.
Yeah, and as far as lining up intention with result, it's great because you wanted a short, snappy, little song, right?
Yeah, got it.
If you wanted to, you could have taken an actual musically different bridge, lyrically different bridge, mm-hmm. where you step away from the immediacy of the rest of the lyric and maybe step out just for, you know, 4/8 measures and then come back to the
even to say something like, you've been bugging me to write you a song. Well, this is it, baby. So enjoy it, right? Even that that would be fun, I think, if I was going to do a rewrite or do something like that and extend it. Because I think I'm never going to be invited to rewrite with Jeff, but I'm just dreaming. I'm just dreaming.
It's an interesting question about
longer is better.
Yeah, but it's an interesting question about the length of songs. You know, like at which point, because I worked with a producer once and, you know, my band had a song that went really well and it was kind of, everyone thought it was going to be a great hit and all that. And he really wanted to add another verse because he thought it was too short. I didn't think it was too short. It was verse, chorus, verse, chorus, first chorus, bridge, and then chorus end. But he wanted to add another verse. And so it was kind of forced. It didn't really kind of fit well with me, and I never liked it. But he wanted to push it to make it longer. So it's an interesting question about when you hit the right length of a song.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, songs should be really short. That's Entertainment by the Jam. It's a really short little song. Great song. I would make it much longer.
It's more a gut feeling, I think, for creators than anybody else. Anything else.
Yeah.
If they feel like, that's the right length, then the rest of it's almost conjecture.
And when we're talking about lengths of songs, I don't think it's very helpful to talk about minutes and seconds. You got to talk about what you're just saying, Bill. It's a verse, it's a chorus.
It's complete.
How many changes are there? Because there's lots of, songs between 2 and 3 minutes that cram in, different verses and bridges and choruses.
There's a lot of stuff in here.
Most of the Beatles stuff was under 3 minutes long.
I mean, if you listen to the melodies, I mean, there's a lot of melodic complexity in here. It doesn't sound complex,
right?
You know, it doesn't sound like prog rock. but there's lots of variation. There's lots of detail within the melody lines. You know, it's not.
I would challenge you, Jeff, to say that there's more narrative here too that's left unsaid. Like, I know you wanted it simple.
It's a bit of a peek into my psyche. That's
well, true. No, I mean, the thing is, so there's a theory that there's a there. It's scary.
I just read the first line. I'm not the type. I'm not the type to go into extremes, but I can do that.
I can do that if you want. I think it's lovely the way it's conversational.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is that some people would say that what you want in the narrative of song or the progress of a song is some sort of movement narratively, so that you have a thought. So you have a thought in the first verse, and you basically have the same thought in the second verse. Then you do this overlap, and then you're out of the song. So what would be interesting to me is to pay off in terms of content or narrative of you're talking about the things that pull you away, but I found that what's really important to me is you. It comes up, beats everything. I was just having a talk with a businessman about this. So I said, what's more important, family or business? And he went, well, family, of course. Like, it doesn't even, there's no competition there, right? But we're all pulled back and forth between these obligations. But what I would challenge you is that there's a possible third verse there or bridgey thing that pays off the story and gives the audience just a little more content rather than there's a lot of things pulling me away, but it's you I love, right?
And a bit more finality to and one last big confirmation. Closure. I was thinking the word closure. Yeah. As it were.
I want to thank Raphael tonight because, you know, we have this clock in the studio, and it was this little tiny thing, and we could never see it. Yeah. He's put it full screen. What is that like? Like it's a 16-inch screen with the clock. So how are we doing for time?
Okay? But how do people get more of your music?
Yes.
A lot of my stuff is on the typical online stores, iTunes, Spotify, Bandcamp. Yada yada.
So J-E-F-1-F.
Jeff with one F.
L-E-E-S-O-N. Son of Lee. And of course, there's way too much about me on my own website, jeffleeson.com.
Great. Well, definitely get all those links onto the show notes.
Absolutely. I haven't got the signal yet because, you know, we're highly technical here.
Yeah.
Raphael's putting his finger down.
Has arrived.
You're supposed to do that right away. You know, like
we're highly
qualified. You're going to have to go into remedial engineering. There's so much to do here. Well, anyway, that's all the time we have on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. I need remedial reading lessons. We'd like to thank our guest, Jeff Leeson.
Great stuff, thank you, sir.
That's Jeff
Leeson.
Thank
you, guys.
Hope you come back.
Spelled glad to be here.
J-E-F. And the last name is L-E-E-S-O-N. You can find him at jeffleeson.com or on all the usual outlets. Jeff Leeson, just Google him. Send us your impressions about tonight's show on Twitter at Song Talk Radio. Email feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site songtalk.ca. Also, subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes and give us a review. It helps at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. Is there a new one coming in the fall?
That's up to Bruce as far as I'm
concerned. Yeah, well, okay. That'll be a long time. Christmas is coming. Yeah. Ho, ho, ho. You can find all the links to all our products, books, web services we mentioned on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources or resources if you like. If you're in the Toronto area, again, a reminder, it's next Wednesday, a week this Wednesday, Songwriters Meetup, Transact Club. It's free to join, and it's free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca meetup for all the details. Thank you, CJRU 1280 for AM, for putting up with us, and we'd like to thank Vanessa Vreeland for handling the social media challenge. Our chief engineer, Raphael Haddad, over there on the board, manning the board. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener.
Even if you're not at home.
Or even the ones that aren't at home. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
NeilMody_.com.
Phil at
TheFilEmery.
Vanessa at Sunny_Vanessa, 2 S's in Vanessa.
And Jeff Leeson.
At Jeff Leeson.
Awesome. And Bruce at Bruce Harrett. And Raphael, you don't want to be followed.
Raphael's into real human connections.
Okay, don't follow Raphael.
Follow him with a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
He'll be fine.
All right.
And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse the past shows and find out how you could be a guest on our show. Keep writing. Goodbye now.
Good night, everyone. Good night.